God's word is a living, active word. At the same time we're reading through these passages, and right now we're in Genesis, and the theme there is trust seen in the life of Joseph. Following Joseph, we're going to go to the book of Daniel, and again, the theme will be trust through this month. Now, what I want to do just as we go through this morning is a little bit of a study around the words of these verses. And I am going to refer to Hebrew words, and I don't want that to worry you. Just understand that the Bible originally is written across languages. The Old Testament recorded and written in Hebrew. And because that's a foreign language to us, it's good to understand the deeper meanings of the words. All right, so don't shut off. Don't be discouraged. Don't feel like you have to know the Hebrew words. Just try and engage with the richer, deeper meaning of the word. Sometimes we can miss it. So, in this, did we get that, Jody? Thank you so much. I just handed this to her before, and I'm grateful you put that in, Jody. This is the theme for this month, is this word trust, and batak is the Hebrew word. And the richer meaning of it is this: to go quickly for refuge. To go quickly for refuge. That word trust to us means, you know, often it's associated with people or with words, and it's kind of like, you know, I just hope you're good for what you're saying. We sort of, trust is not a very strong word necessarily. We value it deeply, but we sort of throw it around. And it generally would mean, you know, I hope you're good for what you're saying, or I hope you're good for what you're offering. But really, the word used here, to trust, those who know your name will trust you. This is it. You will quickly go there for refuge. That becomes your safe place. A deeper meaning of it is to be bold, to be secure without care or careless, and to place our confidence in. But really specifically, to trust God means He becomes my place of refuge that I run to, I rush to, I quickly gravitate towards. And so I ask you this, when you think of safety, when you think of somewhere, someone, something that you run to for safety, what would it be? When I say refuge, what comes to mind naturally for you? All right, any suggestions? Home. That's one that people quickly say, man, if I'm in trouble, if I'm, you know, insecure, if I need to get out of where I am, where am I thinking? Home. Someone. When you think of someone, who do you think of? Parents? Family? Again, these are themes that are common. People, I think, you know, although my dad is older now, for me, it was my dad. And others, the first service, someone was like, my mom. My mom is my safe place, my refuge. But God says this, I will be that. And when you talk about trust in God, He says, I want to be for you that place that when trouble is there, quickly you turn, you rush, you move towards me. But unless we know Him, that's not a tangible statement, really. The word to know, those who know, is this Hebrew word, yada. And know means this, to recognize by familiarity. to acknowledge, to ascertain, to be fully assured of, to be convinced of, to understand. Okay? So to know is not just to be like, I know of. I know that name, or I know I'm somewhat acquainted. No. Are you absolutely assured of, confident of, know that you have ascertained the factuality of? And in the context of 9:10, the word is to know what? Your name. Your name, Hebrew word shem. Now, name, we lose the weight of that very quickly in our English language, because name is just, what do I call you by? What's my reference point for you? Bob, Tim, Dave, Heather, Cheryl, what? But in the Hebrew context, name, and this use of name, shem, is through the idea of definite position. And therefore, by implication, honor, authority, and character. So when the Bible, this verse that we're memorizing, says, those who are absolutely assured of your character, your authority, and your honor, then they will quickly find refuge in you. That's the weight of that verse there. Those who are absolutely assured of, who are certain of, who have ascertained your honor, your authority, and your character will quickly find refuge in you. Man, how much light does that bring to just those words? It's no longer this, you know, those who hope that this God character is good for what he says. No. Those who have absolutely ascertained, understood, become assured of your authority, your character, your position, your honor, will be safe in you, will be found in you, will have refuge in you. For you, God, have never forsaken those who seek you. And I'm going to come to that word seek in a moment. But I want to just look at we've done this over the last couple of years, but it's always a good startup reminder of who does God want us to know him as? He hasn't just left us with this abstract word God. Big guy somewhere out there, spirit something. No, God through his word has said, I'll tell you who I am. I'll show you who I am, not just by someone's idea, but by historical record and context of story. I want you to know who I am. And you go back through the book of Genesis and Exodus and Joshua and many other passages, and you find God introduces himself by this word, Jehovah, the eternally existent and active God, self-existent, not just one who exists. We all exist, but we are not self-existent. We depend on a lot of other stuff, a lot of other people for our survival. God says this, I am self-existent. I don't need you. I don't need anything else. That is who I am. I am the self-existent and always active God. The one who declared that he was the creator of everything, the giver of life. He's also said that he is Elohim, the strong one. That he is El Elyon, the most high. The one that there is no one higher than, stronger than, with more authority than. Nope. He is the most high God. He is El Shaddai, the Almighty One, the Sufficient One, the one who knows no lack, the one who's never going to come up short, fall short, be almost enough, just good enough, maybe make it. No, the God who says, I am all utterly, completely sufficient. Adonai, Lord, Master. We looked at this passage before where this is declared, and you can't say that God is Adonai. You cannot connect with that name of God, Adonai, unless we are willing to humble ourselves and say, I am servant, you are master. This is what God has offered himself as. Jehovah Jireh. The Lord who will provide, or the Lord provides. Jehovah Shalom, the Lord is peace. Jehovah Tzidkenu, the Lord is our righteousness. And so many others that I encourage you to search out. The Lord is our shepherd, the Lord is our healer. And these are passages that God says, I don't want you to know just what to call me. I want you to know what my character is. And those who are convinced of my character will quickly come to me for refuge. I hope this passage is becoming richer. That word to know, used over 900 times in the Old Testament. God wants us to know Him. So if you trust, go quickly for refuge. Know, ascertain, or be assured of His name, His honor, His authority, His character. When you know Him, you can trust in Him. When you know Him, you can trust in Him. And this year is another year of invitation to know Him according to His Word, to discover what the historical record of God's involvement with people is. Read it. To bring certain passages to life. Memorize it. And where do you get to know Him best? In His Word. In His record, in what He encouraged and inspired people to write down and record about Him. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 3, we have this assurance. God reaffirms His word and says, I will never leave you and I will never forsake you. God never has, never will forsake. Now, that word forsake means leave abandoned. God will never leave you abandoned. It doesn't mean that you will always know His working and what He's doing at every time, at every point along the journey. But what it means is that He will never abandon you. Look at the words in Job chapter 23. And this is something that Job is feeling. And if you were here when we read through the whole Bible, the book of Job for some is a very dark book. It's a troubling book. Why would God allow this man to go through what he went through? I believe God allowed him to go through what he went through so that we would be able to look at it and see the faithfulness of God in the overall story. I wouldn't choose to be Job. However much I love you, I don't know that I would choose to be Job that you would know God. I'm just telling you. I wish I could stand here and say, oh, sure, torture me, make me sick, do whatever you want to me. I just want people to know you. I'm not just really naturally motivated that way. But God chose Job. I don't know if Job would have volunteered at the front end of the story. To be told you're going to lose all your children, you're going to lose all your belongings, you're going to lose all your health, you're going to be taken right to the edge of death, you're going to be given poor counsel from those you thought were your best friends, You're going to feel like I have utterly abandoned you, but at the end, you will see my word is sure that I have never abandoned you. And what Job says here is this, if I go to the east, now he's in the midst of it, he's in the thick of the cloud here. If I go to the east, he's not there. If I go to the west, I don't find him. When he's at work in the north, I don't see him. When he turns to the south, I catch no glimpse of him. This is the space that Job feels he's in. Verse 10 of chapter 23 of Job says this, but he knows. He knows the way that I take. He knows where I am. And I know that when he's tested me, when he's tried me, I will come forth as gold. I love that Job says, right now, I don't see him. I don't know where he's working, but I know he still hasn't abandoned me. Job, time and again, says things that are very strong statements. Even if my flesh be destroyed, yet I know that with my eyes I will see God. There's this conflict of experience, but the certainty of this trust that he is absolutely assured and confident. God says he will never forsake, never utterly abandon, never give up on those who seek him. This word seek, again, is a Hebrew word, darash, and it means this, to tread or to frequent or to follow or to search out. God says he will never abandon those who frequent me, who actively engage knowing me, searching out my ways, who follow me, who tread, who walk into his presence, who pursue him, who walk after him, who go on the hunt to know him. God says, I will never abandon you when you set your heart on that pilgrimage to know me. Proverbs 3, 5 and 6. When you trust with all your heart, and don't just lean on your own understanding. That word understanding, again, Hebrew word, is this word bene. And it means, it says this, don't just rest on your ability to bene. Bene means this, to separate mentally or to distinguish. Don't just rest on your ability to make sense of it all. Don't just rest on your ability to bring it all into reason and perspective in your own thinking and mind. Don't do that. Rather, in all your ways, acknowledge. What's that word, acknowledge? Well, this is where it gets interesting. It's exactly the same as the word in Psalm 9, verse 10, those who know. Know. It's this word again, yada. In all your ways, recognize me, ascertain who I am, be assured of, convinced of, understand who I am. In all your ways, know me. Be assured of me. And then know that I will make your path straight. And straight has nothing to do with easy. Straight, the Hebrew word there means right or true. God says, don't just try and make sense of it all. Because when we just try to make sense of it, there are times like Job, if Job had just tried to make sense of it as his friends did, he would have said, this is over. This is abandonment. This is long gone. I don't know what this year holds ahead for any of us. But the one thing that I am assured of, when we seek him, when we know him, he will not abandon us. He will not forsake us. He never abandoned Job. In the end, he really has it out. God has it out with Job. Because as he reasoned, his friends began to, you know, undermine this faith that he had. And tell him, look at your circumstances. There has to be a reason for this. Make sense of yourself, Job. And Job goes, it's got nothing to do with making sense of me. I'm trying to make sense of him. I'm trying to understand God. I want to know his character. And that's the invitation that we have. We're reading Joseph right now. The reason we're reading Joseph is because you get the overall look at the story. Joseph starts out as this young boy. Are you reading along with it? Already these first 5 days, we would have read this, that Joseph begins born into this family, the youngest son and the favored son. This boy grows up silver spoon in his mouth with an ornate robe that he's given that makes him stand out from all his brothers. Early on, he has dreams about how great he is going to be. He has dreams that his brothers all bow to him. He has another dream that his brothers and his parents bow to him. And he knows the favor of his father. And so he walks around in this almost contented delusion that it's all just going to go fine. But he doesn't realize that his own brothers are sick and tired of him. And they actually abduct him and plan to kill him. And instead of killing him, they throw him in a well. I don't know what Joseph felt with the first moment he's grabbed. I think he lives in this delusion that my brothers love me and they're all fine with me. But he's not just grabbed, he's thrown down a well. What do you feel from the bottom of a well looking up at faces that keep checking on you? What do you feel when they throw a rope in and they start to pull you out? I'm sure you start to think, they came to their senses. But as you come out the top of the hole, they're exchanging cash with traders. And they just sold you into slavery in Egypt. But then you're sold into this guy's house who's one of the leaders of Egypt, and he loves you and gives you all the favor and all of the responsibility for his house. And you probably come to this point of going, well, about time. I was kind of tired of that family anyway. This was probably just that blessing of God to get me to this place of blessing. And then you get accused of rape. And then thrown in the king's prison. And Joseph's story seems to go like this, almost a glimpse, and then crash again, almost a glimpse, and then crash again, almost out, and crash again. The reason we're reading this is because you see in all of that, by the time you come to the end of Joseph, that God was working his purpose, his whole story that began with creation, that followed the fall of humanity, but is coming to a day of total redemption and restoration. Joseph's story is a little microcosm of humanity. Your life is just a little glimpse of God's story. And though we are broken, he is working towards this story of redemption and wholeness and completion. But it is not a guarantee that it's an easy ride, that it's smooth sailing all the way. The guarantee is that God will not change. And that which he began, he will complete, whether it's highs or lows, whether you feel loved or abandoned. Whether you feel secure or on shaky ground, it doesn't matter, but for what you're trying to reason away, this is why God says, don't just rely on your ability to reason it. In all your ways, completely acknowledge, be assured of, ascertain who I have said I am. And then you will see that I will make all your paths right, true. I don't know if you'd told Joseph halfway through, as he was about to go down a well, as he was in a camel train on his way to Egypt, when he was arrested and thrown in the king's prison. I don't know if at any of those points it would have been easy to tell him, God's making all your paths straight and true. But looking back, I guarantee you that there's not one bit that Joseph would have changed for the sake of the story. And I know that when we look back over our lives, when we have known the work of God in our lives, there's not one bit that we will look back on and begrudge or regret or despise that has been a part of God's working and shaping in us. So I want you to be assured of that this morning. Don't let anyone steal that from you, rob it from you. Don't let anyone unsettle it in you. Trust God's word. We are going to finish this morning with an invitation to engage God. Because God did not just leave us with written word. He left us with the living word. Hebrews says that Jesus was not just a man, not just a good teacher, not just an instructor. I know people that are saying, man, I get the God idea. I don't do the Jesus thing. If you don't do the Jesus thing, you don't get the God thing. Jesus is the exact image, the perfect representation of God. Not just who came to talk about God, but who came to personally reveal God. That's why we need to know Jesus. And on the night that Jesus was betrayed, this is why we have the table here this morning, the communion table, with bread and with juice that we use to replace that wine. On the night that Jesus was betrayed, with his friends, he took bread and he broke it. And he said, this represents my body. This part of the story of salvation will always represent my body. And whenever you share it together, remember me. Remember my gift to you. Remember my sacrifice for you. And he took the cup. He took that wine and he shared it with them. And he said, this cup represents my blood. And it's a blood of a covenant made with you. A covenant of salvation. And whenever you share it, remember this that I've given you. Remember my gift of life to you. And so this morning, we're going to close taking the communion if you choose to. Don't just take it as routine. Don't just come and take it as part of a ritual. Take it as a reconnect. Take it as a re-engagement. Take it as reigniting that pursuit of Christ, that desire to engage fully in Him, to know Him, to fully partake of Him. And so as Craig and others come, I want you to just reflect for a moment. Go back to that word, to trust. To go quickly for refuge. Go back to that word, to know. To be assured of. To have ascertained. Go back to His name. His honor. His authority, His character. For when you know Him, you will trust Him. And the invitation of God is to know Him. To know Him in His Son. To know Him in His sacrifice. To know Him in His love. To know Him in His grace. And so this morning, as you come, take time to sit before you come to the table. Take time to acknowledge your desire to pursue God afresh this year, this season of your life, to know Him, and then come as you choose.